The following is a King Fisher Media production.
Hey guys, you're listening to the In the Blood podcast. I am your host, AC Bergen Fisher. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen, whether you are new or returning listener. I'd like to invite you to consider what is being shared with an open mind and a receptive heart. Before we begin, though, the following disclaimer. I am a coach, not a therapist. Everything I share is opinion-based and from personal experience. If you require therapy, I'd be happy to help you explore your options. For those who would prefer coaching with me, that could be arranged via email at intheblood.pod@gmail.com. Finally, if you'd like to support this project for as little as $5, you can do so by visiting buymeacoffee.com/intheblood pod. Yeah, I'd like to welcome everybody back to the In the Blood podcast. As most of you already know, what we like to do each week is explore how our relationship with self affects our relationship with others. This week, I thought we'd tackle something that I think is like the best example of how the two intersect, and that is to explore a little bit about how we as individuals deal with grief. And I don't know any person better suited to have this conversation with than my brother, my partner in crime, Jason Moore, who is absolutely no stranger to the show. So everybody wants to join me in welcoming him back with a silent round of applause. Jason, welcome back.
Who thought of the grief angle? Well, thank you very much for that glowing introduction. I actually had an incident that had me wondering why grief hits people differently. I lost my dad a few days ago at 6:30 in the morning. And I thought I would be a lot more saddened by the event. Of course, you know, I have a close relationship with him. He's a phenomenal human being. But I was afraid for a bit. And like, grief, as you know, doesn't hit me like it does normal people. But I thought, since I got a great relationship with my dad and I've reconciled with my mom and I've also reconciled with my biological dad, that there might be a lot more sadness to my grief. And I was kind of disappointed when that wasn't the fact. And then I started thinking maybe I was broken. And you and I just barely started to edge on the conversation, but of course we wanted to save it. But I'm wondering how many different types of grief there are out there. Because I almost feel bad for not feeling sad that Scotty's gone. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. It's quite a bit to unpack just from that first little bit that you shared. I want to start with saying that I've read over and over again about how there's the seven stages of grief, whatever it is. I don't personally believe that those apply in every situation. I wholeheartedly reject the idea that there is a right or a quote unquote normal way to grieve. I think each person is going to navigate the process of grieving in a way that works or doesn't work for them. That's not for somebody else to define. As far as, you know, what you're saying about how you're feeling bad because, you know, you're not grieving, like in your words, like a normal person, you know, like you're not crying, you're not in denial, you're not trying to bargain with a higher power. Oh, please, you know, can this please be different? I can identify to a degree with that. I mean, I didn't deal with that in the early stages when I lost my father. That came close to a year later. I think I had my first day where I wasn't destroyed by tears, and I almost found myself trying to conjure up some tears just because I felt like if I wasn't crying, I wasn't adequately or respectfully honoring his memory. I don't know if any of that's hitting true with you.
Sort of. This man did for things for me when I was growing up, when I thought the rest of my family wasn't there. And the profound love that I feel for this man, honestly, is on par with nobody except my mom and my biological dad. I almost feel angry. Because there's not... See, you had a year where you were actually like sad grieving, right? And I don't think there's anything wrong with how people grieve. But I feel wrong because I don't feel like I am grieving. I love the man more than anything, and every time I talked to him, he knew that. I never left a conversation unsaid, right? I always told him how much I appreciated him being there for me. I always told him I appreciate how much, when I thought nobody else was there, that he was there. That my love for him was always there. And, normally I deal with grief that way. You know, like I say everything I want to say before the person's gone, so I don't have anything to get emotional about. The person knew exactly how I felt, and we exchanged what we were saying, so I don't usually have any grief. But this guy was more to me than that, so I'm surprised there wasn't even like 3 days. You know, you had a year, and then you were feeling guilty because you didn't feel that sad anymore. I didn't even have a day. Like, it didn't happen for me, and I also do not agree with the seven stages. That's a farce to me. But I'm trying to figure out if there's other people out there who don't get sad and grieve or cry or... I feel like I'm grabbing for words because I don't know how to put it properly, because I don't want to put anybody in a box.
I'm not directly inside of your situation, but I'll tell you what I see. And this is like based on the perspective of somebody who knows you well. I see somebody who, I mean, you've experienced a lot of loss in all of the years that we've been close. And I have seen your approach to loss being very practical. You know, like you said, well, I didn't leave anything unsaid. They knew how I felt about them. I don't have any regrets. You know, there's going to be that space in my life that's no longer filled with them. I'm going to notice that space, but I'm not going to like shed a tear. What I've never seen you do in all those years is second guess yourself and question the process and question your emotional attachment or detachment. I mean, in this sense, I feel like you're worried that you're not acknowledging Scotty's loss differently enough because of how special he was. But from where I sit, everything about the way you're approaching this is very, very different.
Oh. Can you vocalize how it's different? Because I honestly can't see it.
Well, I mean, in a sense, it's the same like what you're describing. Well, you know, I don't feel sad, and I feel like maybe I should. But where the difference is that you are questioning that. You've never questioned it before. It's always been a case of, well, why would I cry? Why should I feel bad? I didn't have anything unsaid. We parted the last time we had a conversation, we had a great talk.
Right.
And while all of these things still hold true between you and your dad, what's very, very, very different is like how much doubt and second guessing and questioning and exploring the process and wondering, is something wrong with me? Why am I not crying? This is a side of loss, or a side of you navigating loss I've never experienced.
Okay, fair enough.
So I do think that, you know, if you're looking for a way to send the guy off, in a special sense, you are already very, very much doing that. And you know, I just want anybody who's listening to understand too. I mean, this isn't something that's like completely focused in on what Jason's experiencing or what I've experienced. I mean, we all experience things differently. We all navigate differently. And that's okay. We don't have to follow anybody's formula. We don't even have to follow our own formula. Just be honest with where you're at. Mm-hmm. And I feel like with all your questioning, I mean, that's exactly what you're doing. You're being honest with where you're at. I think maybe you could, you know, again, this is outsider looking in. Maybe you could do a little less beating yourself up. But then again, maybe beating yourself a little bit is part of your unique grief journey this time around.
Fair enough. I genuinely hope people comment on their grief process in the comments, because it is amazingly, I think, unrecognized. There's not a lot of people who do talks on genuine grief feelings and, for lack of a better term, what's right and what's wrong. You know, I want people to interact. When your father first passed, for the first, let's say, 3 months, what kind of roller coaster did you go on?
I didn't deal with it very well by my own estimation. I mean, I spent 3 months catatonic sitting at his desk, and I shut out the whole world around me. I wanted nothing to do with anything. I mean, at the time I was, my wife and I were expecting our first child. I mean, I should have been like rubbing tummy and all this other stuff. And all I was thinking was I'd look at her swollen midsection and I'd almost be like angry, because that was a nonstop reminder that life was moving on. I didn't want life to move on. I wanted life to, if anything, go backwards. I wanted my dad back. I hated looking in the mirror. I would see his face kind of overlaid on mine, and I wanted to put my fist through the glass. But then when I would make my fist, I'd look at my hand and I'm looking down at his hand. You know, it just, there was just so much of him in me and around me that I both desperately needed and couldn't handle at the same time. It was a very, very conflicting time. I felt like I was being torn to shreds.
Wow, that sounds like a rough road.
Well, it's not one I'd be in a hurry to navigate again. I'll tell you that much.
So how did you find yourself after the 3 months or 6 months or however long you're in that position to come out? And what, do you recognize something that kicked you out of it? Or,
I mean, we're going back like 22, 23 years now. So, I mean, I've got the luxury of having unpacked the situation a lot. Mm-hmm. What I realized is that, you know, everybody was saying, well, you know, like time heals all wounds, which is nonsense.
Right.
Doing work has the potential to heal wounds. The passing of time, all that does is it fogs your memory, maybe.
Right.
But what I realized is that, like, it wasn't about the passing of time in the first few years so much. It wasn't so much about what work I was doing or how much I was thinking. It just, I was hitting these certain milestones without even realizing I was hitting them. Mm-hmm. And each one of these milestones did play into the grander picture of the, I don't want to say grieving process necessarily, but the recovering from grief process. You know, there was confusing days, like the first day where I didn't cry. That was a very, very important milestone. Just like the first time, you know, well, the first anniversary of his death is like, man, I didn't think I was going to live through that first day, and I made it 365 more. You know, we had always celebrated our birthdays together, that first birthday without him. That sucked. Did I lose you? Okay, so just so that everybody's aware of what's going on, this recording is happening in two separate sessions about a day apart, because just as Jay was asking me the last question, his power went out and we had to put a pin in this conversation. So if at any point it sounds like there is something missing from the conversation, or maybe we sound a little bit more repetitive than two old men normally sound, that's basically what's going on, because we may have actually lost track of where specifically we were at. So with that said,
with that said, you can go forward with your answer.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, for the first few months after my dad passed, I kind of was going out of my way to make time stand still, but without me even realizing it until many years later, life was continuing to move on. And bit by bit, as much as I had gone out of my way to shut out the world around me, there was these little reminders that life was continuing to, I can't say necessarily move forward, it was continuing to play out. You know, my wife at the time, her tummy was getting rounder. We were expecting a baby. I would get phone calls, people looking for my father and not wanting to leave the responsibility on my mother to have to explain that he was gone. There was those little things which weren't necessarily always pleasant things. They weren't unpleasant things. They were just things that pulled me out of that fog. I remember the first day when I woke up and I didn't feel overwhelmingly sad. You know, I woke up feeling well rested and the sun was shining through the window. And, you know, as much as I would like to pretend that, you know, there was some greater power at work, or maybe it was, you know, me making a concerted effort to work on self, none of that was really the case. Also, it wasn't the case that time was healing all wounds, but the passing of time was absolutely crucial. Because without that passing of time, these reminders wouldn't have come up. Without the reminders coming up, I wouldn't have been forced to start moving along. I mean, it started off just a reminder that life was happening around me. Soon enough, I kind of got caught up in the current of it, and life started pulling me along with it. Then I started walking along with it until, you know, I don't know when exactly the switch happened, but I mean, we're talking 22 years later. And I realized that not only am I moving with life or being pulled by life, I'm actually, you know, living life. And the influence of my father is always there. I still have days where I have somber moments. I might cry, but they're very few. They're very far between. It's more so, you know, like I think what I was mentioning earlier is that I had initially struggled with looking at my face in the mirror or looking at my hands because these things reminded me of my dad.
Right.
I love seeing those things now, especially as I get older and closer to the age he was when he passed. It's like, man, like I'm actually making it. I'm living. I didn't think he died when I was 29 years old. I'm 51 now. Mm-hmm. May 9th of 2002. That was the day he died. I fully expected to be dead of a broken heart on May 10th of that same year. And we were going for end of March, beginning of April, almost of 2024. Mm-hmm. And we're having the conversation.
Right.
I'm going to chalk that up to a win of sorts.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You often, I sometimes have, I guess a sense of loss also with your dad. Because, you know, though we met months after he had passed, you talk about him so much and inform me when I do actions that are much like him and how much like him I am.
Mm-hmm.
I've got that kinship to him, you know, and it, you know, I kind of have a little bit of remorse there. I think, you know, well, frick, I kind of miss him because I kind of know him.
Yeah, it's weird how you can get attached to somebody who you don't directly know, but I guess in a way you kind of do, because I mean, you know, a piece of him, just like, mm-hmm. you know, when I first connected with your biological father, I mean, I'd heard so much about him, of course. I mean, not all good stuff, not all bad stuff, just true stuff, right? I mean, I had an appreciation of this person who was sight unseen. And then, I don't know, once I actually connected with him and, like, I could see what he looked like, I could hear how he communicated. Well, you are by no means exactly your father. There is a hell of a lot of your father in you. And I suspect the same is true of your not biological father. I don't want to say stepfather because I feel like that minimizes Scotty a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you've told me so much about Scotty over the years. It's just like when you texted me to say that he had passed, I'm not going to lie. I kind of got like that sad feeling wash over me too. I could feel that like for me, when I get sad, I get like a tingling in my face. Mm-hmm. And I got a similar feeling to that news as, you know, when I think about somebody that I know directly.
Right.
So.
I got kind of lucky because I got two dads.
Yeah, fair enough.
I've seen a lot of people go through what I would say is unusual circumstances. Like my kids had no experience really with loss, except for my daughter had her best friend pass, and that broke her for many months. And you were around at the time. Well, you're still around. Yeah, you're not talking to a ghost when he's actually here. But what really shocked me was the guilt she felt when her mom passed. Now, I'm not saying she didn't love her mom or anything, because that is not true. She did. That's the heart my daughter has. But unfortunately, her mom wasn't involved much. She chose a different life path, and, you know, not for good or bad, whatever it happens to be, to the individual that she affected. She wasn't around a lot, so there wasn't a lot of interaction. And when she passed, my daughter was broken for a few days. She felt really guilty and owned a lot of, well, I could have, should have, would have. Like it was her fault they didn't connect. But my son, on the other hand, he was confused because he didn't know how to feel. And his words to me literally were, well, what am I supposed to do with this? And I just plainly told him, you're going to feel however you're going to feel. If it's to you to dismiss it because there's no involvement, don't feel bad about it. If you're sad because she's your mom and she's gone and you're going to go into a crying fit for 3 months, you know, don't feel bad about it. You deal how you need to deal, period. No, so you're confused. Well, obviously that's part of your grief process. Don't feel bad about it. Do what you need to do, work through it. Talk to me as you need to talk to me, and you know, go forward however you need to. And once he heard that, I didn't give him permission, but his reaction to my statement was almost like, oh, so I'm allowed to feel whatever. And he transitioned out of confusion to, okay, so I will just accept the fact that she's gone. And he was mildly sad for 2 or 3 days. And then, you know, he did what he needed to do to pack it and move forward.
Yeah, I find it fascinating looking at not just how you and I grieve or your kids, but just looking at how different people grieve in general. Like when I think about when my grandfather died, my dad's dad. Mm-hmm. I found my dad's reaction to his father's passing extremely confusing at the time. Because I was in my early 20s. I didn't really know much about much. I knew that my father and his father, they didn't like each other very much.
Okay.
There was a lot of history there. And my father, I can't say he was super even-tempered, but there were certain emotional reactions I had never witnessed from him before, one of which being a crying tantrum. I'd never seen my father shed a tear, unless it was like a tear of pride or happiness, right? Mm-hmm. But when his dad died, he was like throwing garbage cans. He was growling unintelligible things. He was physically like expressing his rage. And I was having a really hard time figuring out, like, why would you react this way? I would have thought you're happy the old prick is dead, right? And my mom, she looked terrified. She'd never seen him like this either. And she said to me, son, you got to go out and check on your dad. I'm like, holy crap. Like, I don't know how good of an idea this is. Cause I mean, what the listeners don't know, but what you do know, Jason, is what a dangerous man he could be if properly stimulated, we'll say.
Or motivated, yeah.
And naturally, I was scared to the point of needing adult diapers of approaching him in this condition. But I did it because my mom asked me to. And I finally grabbed my dad by his shoulders, like, hey, what's going on? Like, why are you so upset? And he said, I'm not upset about what was. I'm upset about what never was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so when I, bringing everything full circle back to like how neither one of us really buys into the seven stages of grief. I'm just going to read through those in order just so that everybody is well aware of maybe why we're disagreeing. So the seven stages of grief are shock, denial, anger, bargaining, depression, testing, and acceptance. Now, my personal experience has been that, first of all, not all those things actually play into the mix, and they sure as hell don't happen in that order for me. Mm-hmm. Based on what you're talking about with your loss of your dad.
No, they definitely don't apply.
I'm not hearing any of them.
Right.
You know, your kids' reaction to losing their mom. Those seven stages don't really play in. I mean, maybe the acceptance part.
Right.
But that's hardly profound. At a certain point, like, we just have to accept reality.
Yeah.
You don't need to be a brain or a... I was going to say a rocket surgeon. You don't have to be a psychologist or a psychiatrist to understand that at some point people, barring some sort of like major, major mental malfunction, will be able to grab a hold of what is staring them in the face.
Right.
What I would be interested in hearing is, you know, from anybody who's listening, whether you agree with or disagree with the seven stages of grief, just tell us what your personal experience has been. You know, Jason and I, we at times tend to look at the world a little bit differently than, well, what I would say is, yeah, a lot of people. I was tempted to say normal, but who knows what normal is, right? And when I think about like how our families may have different ways of looking at it, well, maybe that's why we look at things differently too. It's we're all coming from the same bubbles, right?
Well, and we're, I'm going to go on a ledge here, but I'm going to say our upbringings are relatively different than the stereotypical normal upbringing.
Fair enough. Yeah, that was one of the things actually I wanted to bring up earlier is like when you were talking about how, like when you're dealing with like grief as in the context of the loss of somebody close to you, the loss of their life, why you don't emotionally process the same way as other people. It may not like hit you in the feels in the same kind of ways. You had talked about on a different podcast years ago, a little bit about your life growing up on the streets and how you had experienced and witnessed some fairly extreme expressions of violence, including the brutal death of at least one person who was extremely close to you. I don't want to tell your story. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say that it like desensitized you to death, but I think when you've been surrounded with that sort of thing, it's sort of, it's not the shock that it would be to somebody who's never tasted death.
Fair enough. I was, so since we were cut off, I've had some more time to think. And something I also remembered was that when football died, so there's a scenario of, and we'll probably edit it and we'll put it somewhere for you guys so you guys can hear my story. But I had a friend of mine die in my lap. And I do remember thinking, we had lots to do. We had so much more that could have been said. Like, you know, he's done so much for me. He's saved my life a couple times. You know, there was a lot of unsettlesome, I think maybe subconsciously. That is where I'm going to make sure I tell everybody that's important to me how I feel in the moment. Because I never want to feel like this again.
It sounds like then you kind of got a crash course at a fairly young age in how Jason needs to manage grief.
Right. And it wasn't like, and in the moment I wasn't sad. Again, it wasn't I'm crying, I lost my friend, blah, blah, blah. And I don't mean to minimize it by saying blah, 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 but it's just, there's a lot that could go in there. I don't want to say it all. But it was something missing. You know, like, he didn't know how I felt. He didn't know that how much I appreciated him. Well, half the time we were high and we couldn't tell each other how we felt. And the other half, we had to be tough because we were in downtown Toronto, so we didn't tell each other. We kind of knew, but it would have been much more effective in my head had we verbally put it there so each other knew.
Yeah.
You know, the whinings of a child, right? Because I pretty much was a child when he died. It left a lot of unanswered questions that I never wanted to be in a position like again. So I think, like I said earlier, I think that was the start of my evolution to, well, you know what? If they're important to you, you make sure you say what the hell you feel. Because if you don't, you're going to lose huge. And when you and I didn't like each other, I made it perfectly clear to you how I felt. When we did like each other, I made it perfectly clear to you how I felt. And all through it, I've shared with you. You were a little bit more reserved than I was, which there's nothing wrong with it. We're two different human beings. But in your way, you told me. It wasn't always verbally, but your actions showed it. Your helping me out at times showed it. You know, you did a lot in your way to show me as well. So it's not like if I died tomorrow, I want you to know that I know exactly how you feel. I know exactly what you think of me, my character, my lifestyle, my children, and all that kind of stuff. Because I also like to lessen the opportunity for somebody else to have that burden when I'm gone.
Something I would like to share with the audience that very few of you actually know, because it's not something that I think I've talked about much while I've done appearances on other shows, is that when Jason talks about, like, he'll speak in vague terms about how he lets me know how he feels. And this isn't just a case of, like, on my birthday, him giving me a firm and meaningful handshake and saying, you know how much I care about you, right? This is the guy who 3 to 5 times a week will send me a text message at least once per day saying, hey, brother, hope you're having a fantastic day. Hey, how you doing? Just to let you know, I love you. Sometimes he'll pick up the phone. He'll do what I call like a drive-by phone call. I'll answer the phone. I'll say hello. He'll say, hey, I love you. And you'll hang up. Likewise, when I've been a right prick to him, he'll just tell me that straight too. But he'll also tell me that, like, I love you. Don't let that ever slip out of your mind. You've pissed me off today, but I love you. You know, and for years, I couldn't understand where that was coming from. And like, for the upbringing I had, like, I don't know. I had trust issues when somebody's showing affection.
Then you thought I was a bit of a puss.
But when you started explaining to me what you believed grief to be and why you weren't affected the same way that a lot of other people were, then it started to come a little bit more into focus. And while I still disagree with you in the sense that I don't think that, like, the way you define grief is, actually, I can't say I disagree with you. the way you define grief, I don't think is applicable to me. I don't think it's applicable to everybody. It certainly is applicable to you. But can you describe like why it is that you think most people grieve as hard as they do?
Okay. So now I don't think this for everybody, but I do think the majority of the people grieve because you always hear the statements at a funeral where, you know, oh, I should have told him how much I loved him more. I should have done this more. I should have, oh, you know, I never told him this because of that, or I never told her that because of this. So it seems like a lot of the time people hold that grief and that remorse out of not truly being honest with somebody, not telling them exactly how they feel. Now, I used to hold that for everybody. That used to be my firm. Like, if you were sad, then it's because you didn't say everything you wanted to say. I no longer believe that. But I do believe that most people grieve mostly because of things are unsaid or were left unresolved or, you know, oh, I could have picked up the phone and talked to my mom. I haven't talked to her for 3 years. You know, I'm so sad and I'm crying because so much more could have happened in that 3 years. So in my brain, the calculation is lack of communication plus stubbornness equals resentment or remorse. Because a lot of times people resent people for dying and not giving them an opportunity to say something either.
Yeah, I think, well, I'm glad that you clarified that you no longer hold that hard position, because the first time you told me what you thought grief was, my honest response was, F you. Because when I, like, again, I don't want to like keep on harping on and on about my dad, but I mean, that's the most meaningful person I've lost. So that's my go-to example when I'm talking about grief. And we didn't have anything unresolved between the two of us when he passed. There was nothing left unsaid. I was just feeling seriously ripped off because I wanted more time with him. I enjoyed our conversations and I wasn't looking forward to those coming to an end. I couldn't imagine a world without him in it.
Right.
I mean, 22 years later, I mean, I made a lot of progress, but I still have days where I reach for the phone because I want to tell my dad how my day went, you know?
Right.
That to me is what grief is. It's just that aching hole that can't be filled by anybody or anything else. Mm-hmm. I can see how my view of things and your view of things actually is pretty compatible, because all of these things that I feel would be dramatically amplified if I had been dishonest or incomplete in the way I communicated with others.
Right.
And another thing I'd like to share too with the audience is that, you know, whereas I still am, I think, much more awkward with this sort of thing than Jason is, he has sort of like forced me to come, I can't say out of my comfort zone, but to the outer edges of my comfort zone. Whereas I have learned to reciprocate on some level some of the things that he gives me in the same language. Likewise, he's learned to communicate with me in the more awkward person friendly ways that I appreciate, while still retaining his preferred, like, just overt in your face, I love you approach. And, you know, when the day comes where one of us is no longer here, I think the other one will be in a better position to deal than either one of us would have been before.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Yeah, I'd also like to take this time, again, like you touched on it a bit earlier, but I also want to take this time to ask people to send us emails to write in the comments and let us know how you feel about grief or grieving processes you've gone through, because I would like to do a follow-up of this with testimonials and get more in-depth with how other people are feeling about it. And also let us know that, yes, you give permission for us to use you as an example or not. And if you don't, we won't. But if you do, you know, it would be really cool to do a follow-up of this with the a more rounder perspective because, you know, learning from other people's experiences too.
Yeah. And also if you've got a story of a different type of grief, I mean, we've been focusing mostly on the death of a loved one, but I mean, we can lose people to circumstances as well. Mm-hmm. Situations change, health changes. I mean, I personally, like, I mean, I don't want to get too deep into the weeds, but I mean, just to throw it out there as an example, I'm in some ways dealing with the grief of the loss of my former self. I mean, it's sort of how it goes when you get older and slower and a little bit more health issues, right? But all things be all to keep in mind. And absolutely, yeah, I want to mirror everything Jason said. I'm not going to repeat it. I think he did a good job.
Thank you.
And yeah.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, I think that's about as short and sweet as a closing thought needs to be. And until next week, my friends, much love.